I guess we can call this the culmination of the David Price redemption tour. What he was able to do tonight, game two of the World Series, the Red Sox win, and they're now two wins away, halfway home to a fourth World Championship this century, and David Price was a huge part of the story. I'm with you up until 2 o'clock. We'll be taking your phone calls. You can load up the lines early and often at 617-779-7937. That's 617-779-7937. If you're leaving Fenway, if you watch the game, listen to your on WEEI, you saw David Price spin, by today's postseason standards especially, nothing short of a gem. And he was excellent tonight, and it came in the face of still, it seemed a lot of healthy skepticism when thinking about what Price would be able to deliver in a postseason spot. And after Price was able to shut down the Astros in Game 5 in the ALCS, I heard so many different yeah buts, so much moving of the goalposts when it comes to Price, who had finally, after a lot of well-deserved criticism in the postseason, certainly not absolving him of his playoff starting pitching track record, including in this postseason that came against the Yankees as Exhibit A, but after all of that, had been able to overcome and win a game on the road, must-win game for the opposition opposite Justin Verlander. We talked about this a bit last night, but still a ton of yeah buts with that. They had a two-game cushion. Even if it came back to, you know, he loses that game, you come back to Fenway, not a lot of pressure. Well, how about tonight? It's game two. You want to avoid the split going into three games in Los Angeles. It's the weather conditions where Price supposedly struggles, right? The tingly fingers, 44 degrees at game time with a wind chill that dips down into the mid-30s against the best offense the National League at least has to offer. Not quite what the Houston Astros have, but you've got an offense that put up 235 home runs over the course of the season. And Price goes out and delivers. I mean, he was excellent tonight throughout his entire outing. And he did a couple of things. One, he was able to pitch well when the other guy was also dealing. Hyunjin Ryu was very, very good tonight. Excellent curveball. He did what Clayton Kershaw couldn't do in game one, which is make the Red Sox, a good fastball hitting team that doesn't like the curveball nearly as much, have to face a lot of good curveballs. And that seemed to keep this offense off balance, at least at times, through the first four innings. So Price pitched well when he had to because he didn't have a lot of wiggle room, really none for a while. And then in the fourth inning, when the wheels could have come off, I mean, that could have been it right there. That was the implosion, potential implosion moment for David Price. And not to make excuses for him, but I really did feel like he got squeezed. I thought he had Taylor a couple of times on a 2-2 fastball and then on the 3-2 pitch. Those both looked like strikes to me. I know the K-zone and the graphs and everything showed that they were just millimeters outside. Price was getting that pitch in the second and third inning, didn't get in the fourth. That's just not what you're looking for out of a home plate ump in the World Series. But they won, so you'll limit, and I'll limit, the belly aching when it comes to umpires and strike zones. But that was the chance for the Dodgers. Put a big number on the board, get Price out of the game, get the Red Sox in the bullpen early. And they couldn't do it, and in large part, it was because of David Price. I mean, he was able to work through a really good at-bat by Hernandez. Big-time strikeout for Price after a 9-pitch at-bat. Gives up the base hit after that to Puig, and the Dodgers get their first lead. But overall, that's a great job to limit the damage. Benintendi makes that catch in the fifth, and then that was it. The Dodgers never had a sniff after that. And it wasn't just Price. He was a big part of it. And he's, in my mind, the big story from tonight's game. It's David Price, postseason GOAT no longer after this. But it was also the bullpen. And Price, in going through six innings and getting out of the fourth, limits the damage, keep the team in the game when Ryu's pitching well. But he also puts the Red Sox in a situation where they didn't have to go to Matt Barnes tonight, didn't have to go to Ryan Brazier tonight. You go Kelly, Eovaldi, Kimbrel, done. And the Dodgers were a beaten team. Never had a shot, never even had the slightest hint of a pulse in the sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth innings. And it was Price tonight. You got to give it to him. The guy who has endured a lot of criticism, again, much of it deserved, and certainly because of his postseason track record, not in Boston entirely, but in multiple cities as a starter, He has consistently come up small in big moments. But this is back-to-back spots against Houston in Game 5 and tonight against the Dodgers, where David Price was every bit the pitcher you want him to be as a $31 million top-of-the-rotation guy. And he outdueled another guy who was pitching really well tonight in Hyunjin Ryu and put the Red Sox in a position where now they're on top, 2-0, 4-2 victory tonight. And I don't think, and I said this at the beginning, I thought it was Sox in 5, I don't think this thing's coming back to Fenway. I think we saw our last game of baseball at Fenway Park for calendar 2018 tonight. That's it. I just don't see this thing coming back to Fenway Park. I think the Red Sox wrap it up at worst, taking 2 out of the next 3 in Los Angeles. They've been a dominant road team in the postseason. And by dominant, I mean they haven't lost on the road in the postseason. So the team that just went into Houston and beat the defending champions in their building 3 straight after losing game 1, 4 straight in the series, I have every confidence in the world they can go to Los Angeles and take 2 out of 3, especially the way the bullpen's pitching. We'll talk a lot about the bullpen tonight. We'll get some J.D. Martinez thoughts, a couple of storylines that kind of popped up during the day that I got at least a little bit of amusement out of. So we'll talk about those as well. But mostly, I want your reaction at 617-779-7937 to this Red Sox win and now going back to Los Angeles game 3 on top 2-0. Let's go to the calls. Phil in Mendon is going to be leading us off here on Red Sox Review. Hello, Philip.
Hey, Chris, just leaving the ball game. Right off the bat, the group we were with, we're just discussing after the ball game, walking out to our cars. Philosophy changes now. No DH in the National League. L.A. Dodgers led the National League and I believe the American League, also combination, most home runs in both leagues. And you come down to basically a pitcher is now going to have to hit. He's going to have to run. You've got JBJ. Probably will sit. J.D. Martinez will play the outfield. Betts, I don't see him at second base. He'll move over to center field. But again, the philosophy changes. Core, I mean, everything he's touching. You know what I know, Chris. His decisions have been awesome, great. But it does, the philosophy changes as far as National League ball. And again, there's several different things we, you know, I just brought up. So even the weather, it's going to be 80-something, so that helps out L.A. More foul ball room, things of this sort. So that's their only hope. Otherwise, like you said, maybe five games. But again, I think we'll see Cora how he would be as far as National League and, you know, certain moves, things of this sort.
Yeah, I've got all the confidence in the world in him. And thanks for the call, Philip. Hope you enjoyed the game tonight. All the confidence in the world in Alex Cora, especially relative to the guy he's going up against. I think this is 3 straight managers. One that I think is really good in A.J. Hinch, but 3 straight managers that he's run circles around. And for all, I mean, Dave Roberts has managed these first 2 games like he's playing with National League rules. Everybody has played. He's had the full part. He would be perfect in Little League rules where everybody's got a bat or play three consecutive outs in the field. He's done it. Everybody's gotten into the game both times, and he's had to go deep into his bullpen now a couple of different times. And it doesn't seem like Roberts has got the same feel for this series or his team as Alex Cora does. Roberts more so a slave to the righty-lefty matchups. The obvious example of that was going away from Pedro Baez last night. And, you know, Devers was supposed to come up in that point. They go to the right-hander in Nunez, take Baez out of the game. There was sort of that point-counterpoint, but Baez had gotten 2 straight guys out with very, very impressive efficiency, and it seemed like he could retire guys from either side of the plate. You try to be a slave to the matchups. Okay, get Devers out of the game. Nunez comes in, hits a home run. And Alex Cora, you're not seeing that same kind of being, a slave to those matchups when it comes to how he's managing substitutions, how he's managing his pitching staff here. And it becomes a little bit more complex, sure, in the National League ballpark. But I think with Rick Porcello starting in Game 3, maybe Eovaldi, it might be Eduardo Rodriguez in Game 4. I wouldn't rule that out. I don't think you're counting on either one of those guys getting to a third time through the order anyway, no matter what. So, yeah, there are some wrinkles that come into it. But Cora was with an Astros team that went into a National League ballpark last year in the World Series. Obviously had some interleague play experience here. And I just think he's got such a good feel for it. I mean, you look at tonight, just a sort of a minor example, but staying with Steve Pearce in the fifth, that's not something that Dave Roberts would have done at that point. And I'm looking at process here, not result, because the result was Ryan Madsen couldn't come close to finding the plate, and it didn't matter whether Pearce was standing in the right-handed batter's box, left-handed batter's box, where he was. He was getting walked there. I thought Madsen threw five balls, but certainly four of them were nowhere close. But he stays with him in that spot. Why? It's early in the game. You know you're going to have time potentially to get to Moreland. The splits aren't so overwhelming that you've got to be automatic and robotic with the right-left matchups. Pearce is better against lefties, but he's good against righties. And you trust your guy and you stick with it. I mean, there's sort of this educated feel that Alex Cora seems to have, where there's analytics that go into it. Certainly, it's not like he's just out there, Sonny Gunslinger, with every move that he makes, going with whatever. Hey, YOLO, let's have Steve Pearce hit and see what happens. Jesus, take the wheel. But what he is doing is making informed decisions coupled with a belief in his guys, and they've talked about this to a man, and a good feel for what the situation calls for. I think a better feel than Dave Roberts has. So even going to the National League, even going to NL rules, I'm sorry. I look at it and say advantage Red Sox, advantage Alex Cora. 617-779-7937. Tyler in Rhode Island next on Red Sox Review. Hello, Tyler.
Hey, how you doing, Chris?
Doing well.
Hey, there's not a whole lot to complain about with the game tonight. I mean, it was pretty well played. My only complaint was that towards the end of Ryu's outing there, he was having a hard time picking up calls from his catcher, and the pressure was really on him. I think the bases were loaded, or it was first and second. And he just couldn't seem like he could get the call, and I really feel like it took away from the game at that moment. It was a high-pressure moment, and the catcher had to go out at least two times, I believe. And I was just wondering if it was just me that noticed that, or if it was just kind of it took a really high-pressure moment and kind of really brought it down. And I guess that was their goal, but that's an issue that I see happening more and more in baseball, and it's more amplified in the playoffs, to be honest with you.
Well, and especially in that spot, Tyler, and thanks for the phone call, it was noticeable. And you're dealing with a few different hurdles there, right? And the obvious ones are Ryu's in the World Series. He'd been cruising. All of a sudden, he's not cruising anymore. Red Sox are a good part of the lineup, and he also didn't speak the language. So you're dealing with a language barrier there. The pitching coach has to go out with the interpreter. Then you can't make another managerial mound visit, so you got to go out there and speak the universal language of baseball, I suppose, when the catcher goes out a couple of times. It took away from it a bit, but there was still a lot of drama in that fifth inning. I noticed it, but I guess it didn't suck the drama out of what was happening in the fifth inning, especially what happened after Ryu got out of the game. When they brought in Madsen, which I don't think was a bad move on Roberts' part. There's just nobody in baseball that's got more postseason experience that's active than Ryan Madsen. He just melted down in that spot. But it still, for me, had a lot of drama there in the fifth inning. But what Tyler said right at the first point there, yeah, there's not a lot to complain about. Everything you look at top to bottom is good. I know I took a call last night about Mookie Betts, concerned about him at the top of the lineup, and immediately I say no, because even when he's not quite right, even when he's going through a little bit of a slump, he can still make things happen. And last night wasn't a great game for Betts. It was a good game. He scored two out of their eight runs. He was able to put pressure on the Dodgers right away in that game last night with a base hit, stolen base, tacos, and then coming across on the hit by Andrew Benintendi. But you stick with him tonight, and you're one, and I wouldn't really call it a complaint, I'm just going off what a caller said, but that one potential issue, three hits tonight. You know, you get a 3-hit performance from Mookie Betts. It's just everything this team touches. I heard Drellick say on the morning show today, it almost doesn't matter. Matchups, what Cora decides to do, righty, lefty, numbers, saber metrics, it almost doesn't matter. And he said it, Drellick said it sort of derisively, like it's just there's this charm with this team. Yeah, maybe there's some of that, I suppose. They've got a good run going and things have broken their way when they've had to. But I think it just comes down to they're better than everybody else. I really don't think it's that complicated. They're just better. They won more games than anybody in the regular season. They beat 200-win teams that I think unanimously across baseball, most objective people would say, order them how you want after the regular season, but the Yankees, Red Sox, Astros are the three best teams in baseball. The Red Sox dispatched the other two and without a lot of fanfare, beat them soundly. And then they get into the World Series and you're seeing a team that's just better, that's also playing really well, a bullpen that's peaking. David Price in the postseason that we haven't seen this version of Price as a starter in the playoffs his entire career. So some things are breaking their way, but the bottom line is they're deeper. They get they have a relentless attack with their offense. I used that word a lot last night on Red Sox Review. They can do damage from all parts of the lineup. And now all of a sudden, the Achilles heels that they thought they had, potentially, David Price is a starter, shaky bullpen. It's been exactly the opposite, and that was certainly on display tonight in Game 2. 617-779-7937, Brett in Springfield up next. Hey, Brett.
Hey, buddy. How are you?
I'm great.
Hey, love listening to you. I think everyone should stop calling. You can just rant. But
I like ranting.
Besides that, listen, I think it's time for us to eat crow on the David Price thing. I mean, look at Cora, God bless him, has some, you know, finger on the pulse in terms of his relationships in that clubhouse. I don't know about you, but when he had two guys on, or bases loaded, whatever it was, I mean, we're all thinking David Price is going to blow it. I mean, that's where we're at, and that's what it's come to. And he just sticks with guys. You know, look at Nunez coming in to pinch hit. Everyone says, oh, he loves Nunez. Well, no, maybe he has some sense and some confidence in the guy and just runs with his people. And, yeah, I think it's time for us to shut up about the David Price thing. Not you necessarily, but the guy really has some type of pulse on his team. It's real impressive, and the energy is unbelievable. And I think they probably do win 2 out of 3, and that's it. So that's
yeah,
my take.
That's how I feel about it, Brett, and thanks for the call. Cora, like I said, he's lapping these other guys. And A.J. Hinch is a good manager. Cora learned from him last year. And I thought he was better than Hinch in the series. It didn't decide things in the same way. The Red Sox kind of steamrolled him in 4 straight. But he's been much head and shoulders above Dave Roberts through the first two. Unlike Aaron Boone, he had a good sense of what time the game was starting in the ALDS, and Boone had all sorts of issues. That was the one of the potential fears, I guess, in the back of your mind coming into the playoffs. Right? Rookie manager, untested in the postseason, what do you get? Because you could have gotten Aaron Boone. You could have gotten the guy who seemed like what was happening around him was just a little bit too fast in a short series, and he didn't quite have a handle on it. Or you could have Cora, who's been on top of absolutely everything that has come his way so far throughout the course of this postseason. To the point where if the Red Sox do finish this off and don't come back to Boston, you're looking at a historic run, 3 series and 3 losses. If they can manage that, assuming they take 2 out of 3, don't sweep, and finish this thing off in 5, it's a really good team, but it's also a product of Alex Cora. And as far as David Price goes, yeah, what do you say about Price at this point? Do you still want him to opt out? Maybe if you're looking at all the money on the back end of the contract. But if you're objective, if you're looking at what Price has done in these last 2 starts in the postseason, if you're looking at the significant role, and this is one where I've been consistent. I've said this in spring training. The Red Sox win the World Series, David Price will play a significant role. They will not get it done without him. And that's been the case. And he was really good in Game 5. People wanted to slide the goalposts away. Oh, it wasn't a real pressure situation because they still had 2 games to cushion coming back. Well, he was still facing Verlander in their ballpark in a must-win game for Houston, and he was great. I don't know what the yeah but is for David Price tonight. I don't know what it is. Even got into trouble when he was missing. His command was outstanding. When he was missing, he wasn't missing by much. You want to say he wasn't squeezed? Fine, but he was not missing by much on some of those pitches in the 4th inning that got him into trouble. Had to come closer to the middle of the zone on some pitches, and they got hit, but worked out of it. And put the bullpen in a great spot as well. Let's keep the calls rolling here. Let's go to Roy in Fall River up next. Hello, Roy.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
Park. It was a great game. I got
tickets to game four in L.A., so I'm looking forward to that.
Attaboy.
It's impossible to criticize Cora, but there was something that just didn't make sense for me, and I'm hoping that you can clear up. When Leon gets on base in the fifth, and we're down 2-1, and then Mookie singles in the second, it seems like that's a time to pinch run for him. Because if Benintendi singles, I don't know that Leon makes it from second where Holt would have. So I didn't understand not pinch running for him with two other catchers on the on the roster. And then my second...
Wait, you mean Vasquez, right? Leon didn't play tonight.
I'm sorry, yeah, Vasquez.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I don't know why we didn't pinch run for Vasquez. That didn't make sense to me. And then my second point is, whether Price opts out or not, I don't know why there's not more conversation about us, looking at signing Eovaldi to a long-term contract. I know he's had two surgeries. The kid looks great. So I'd like to hear your comments on that, and I appreciate you taking the call.
Yeah, no problem. I didn't have a huge issue with the non-pinch running of Vasquez. Again, fifth inning, I know it felt late. This kind of goes back to my point on Pierce and staying with Pierce, not going to Moreland in that spot, even though he did go to Mitch Moreland a little bit later in the game. Fifth inning feels late when you've had a few innings in a row where Ryu's looked really good, and all of a sudden the Red Sox are facing a deficit, and it's been a week since we've seen this team trail, and they hadn't trailed in the World Series, but it's still really early in the game. And look at what Dave Roberts is managing that way. He's making moves early in the game. He is getting everybody for two straight games, everybody on his bench, into the ball game at one point or another, and in some cases early. You get guys coming off the bench getting multiple at-bats. But it doesn't seem like the right approach for every situation. I didn't think it was the right approach there. You get Vasquez on, you got two outs at that point. You're still thinking big inning, but there is two outs. He's able to turn the lineup over with two outs no matter what. You're in a position where you have no margin for error, but the Red Sox have come up in those situations time and time again, and they were able to here. I didn't have a huge issue with Vasquez being on the base paths at that point. And it's the same thing with Pierce staying in, even though statistically he'd never had a hit against Madsen. I guess he still doesn't because he didn't throw him a strike. But statistically, it would have been the better move to switch righty-lefty there. But Pierce still good against righties. Leave him in. It's early enough in the game that you don't need to make those kinds of moves. That's what Dave Roberts is doing on the other side. As far as Eovaldi goes, he's been outstanding. It's kind of another conversation for another day about how the market's going to develop for Nathan Eovaldi. And the free agent market has been quirky over the past couple of years. And J.D. Martinez is a great example of that. A guy didn't sign till the very end and at an unusual type of contract compared to what you'd think he would get. So I don't know what the market's going to be for Eovaldi. The prevailing winds seem to be that somebody's going to offer him a lot of money as a starter and he's going to go elsewhere. And I'd have no problem with that whatsoever. It's still a very positive pickup for Dave Dombrowski as depth in the starting rotation. And now the solution to the eighth inning, the eighth inning, the worry that Red Sox fans have of how do you get to Craig Kimbrell? Well, it's Ben Eovaldi. And I guarantee you, if the Sox have a lead, unless it's a lead that it's a laugher, it's a 9-1 type game. If they have a lead, four runs or fewer, somewhere in that ballpark, what we've seen in games 1 and 2, somewhere there, Eovaldi's going to pitch game 3. He'll pitch in the eighth inning in game 3, and Alex Cora will worry about game 4 when game 4 comes around. Maybe that means Eduardo Rodriguez gets a start. Maybe that means they try to piece something together. Probably means Rodriguez, and maybe it means Drew Pomeranz. At this point, you could start Drew Pomeranz, who I was surprised to even see on the postseason roster, and I would just assume that Alex Cora's got a pretty good feel for what's going on. He's earned that ultimate benefit of the doubt that few do. But Eovaldi has been a fine for this team on a lot of different levels. In the eighth inning, what he's given them there was no hope. And think about how good this bullpen is. Bullpen that was criticized with good reason for various points at various points this season. They had the Dodgers in a situation where they had no hope whatsoever. None. And a big part of that was Eovaldi coming in the eighth inning. Nate Nandover wants to talk about Alex Cora. Hey, Nate.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I think the thing that I've noticed most in this series is that Dave Roberts seems very reactive, whereas Cora seems to be proactive and steady. I think he said it best when he said that he doesn't want to manage the opposition. He wants to manage his team. and seeing Dave Roberts scrambling with some of these moves and, you know, Cora staying steady with David Price and Cora staying steady, as you said, with Pierce tonight in the fifth. He's not reacting. He's doing what he thinks is best for his team, and he's a real steady guy.
Yeah, and that's been the case for Alex Cora throughout the year. Now, look, it's easy to stay steady from the beginning of the season when your team wins 17 out of the first 20 games. Hey, steady as she goes. We're playing 850 baseball. But that's the difference between Cora and Roberts. I'm not going to completely fault Roberts here. It's not like the guy's a bad manager or hasn't had success. Dodgers have had a lot of success. They were in the World Series and damn close to winning it a year ago. But he's getting outmanaged through the first two games, and I think the reactive proactive is an interesting way to look at it. I almost feel like in some cases Dave Roberts has been a little bit too proactive with how reactive he's been, if that makes any sense at all. In other words, the first opportunity he has to react to a matchup, a situation in a game, he jumps at it. Whereas Cora is, and steady is the word that the caller used, and I think it's a good one. Okay, fifth inning, don't need a pinch run, don't need a pinch hit, don't need to panic here. This team's gotten it done a lot with two outs. I'm back up to the top of the order. Let's let my best hitters be my best hitters and figure this thing out. And that's what you got from Alex Cora, and that's what you got from the Red Sox here. I'm a little disappointed, by the way, and we got a few open lines for you guys at 617-779-7937. Oh, he just jumped back on. There was a caller in the comment line said, no way they win. So I'm really curious to see where that one's going in a minute here. But first, let's go to Steve in Miami on Alex Cora. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Chris, how you doing?
I'm fantastic.
So are the Red Sox, and so is Red Sox Nation, I'll tell you. It just seems that everything Alex Cora is doing is amazing. I mean, before I get into the much maligned bullpen where everybody was waiting for Dombrowski to make a move, when Mitch Moreland pinch hit, the way things have been dropping for the Red Sox and Cora, I really was expecting, if not a home run, at least a hit. I mean,
yeah.
That's what the expectations have become. You know, that everything he's done is turning to gold, in a sense.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
And I was really disappointed, of course, when he struck out as all of Red Sox Nation. But when he was announced, I said, okay, here we go again. This is Nunez all over again. Even if it's not a home run, he's going to do something. But I wanted to talk about the much maligned bullpen, Dombrowski, and everybody else. And I also was wondering why he didn't go after anybody. Maybe they had, I mean, it seems like Alex Cora really has it planned out, more so than Roberts, more so than a lot of managers. I mean, he knew going into the playoffs, Evaldi, Porcello, even Sale, that he was going to use everybody. I like the idea that he's not worried about tomorrow. He's taking one game really at a game at a time, and he's really doing anything possible just to win that game so that there's less games to win to get the World Series Championship. I just like the way he's handled everything, but especially the bullpen.
Yeah, and look, the approach, and thanks for the phone call, Steve, the approach for Cora has been a little bit of a balance, and for example, sticking with Chris Sale into the fifth inning yesterday. He said flat out, that's a product of it's a seven-game series, and I want to see if I get a little more from this guy. Seven-game series, don't want to blow the bullpen out in game one. So there is a thought about tomorrow, but when it comes to it's time to step on the jugular, it's time to put this team away, whether it was Sale in the bullpen of the Yankees or Evaldi since then, who has fallen into that eighth-inning role, or even Rick Porcello. You know, Porcello's going into game three as a starter, but this is already his fifth appearance in the postseason, and two of them have been holds in the eighth inning and wins, one against the Yankees and one against the Houston Astros. Even he's been effective in that role. So the idea that if you have that opportunity, if you have the chance to put a team away, do it. And might that change things a little bit for tomorrow, or in this case, 2 days from now? Sure. Yeah, maybe Evaldi starts in game three if he doesn't pitch the eighth inning tonight. But instead, you got Rick Porcello with a 2-0 lead, and it was a no-doubter in the eighth. You know, instead of putting in, you know, Ryan Brazier, for example, he struggled a little bit in the game yesterday. Instead of going back to him or burning Matt Barnes 2 days in a row, you're able to use Evaldi, still potentially save him as a starter for game four. Again, I don't think it's a slam dunk, because if the Red Sox have a chance, he may pitch in the eighth again on Friday night. And go to Rick Porcello, who, yeah, maybe not as strong an option as Eovaldi as a game three starter, but you're going in confident with a 2-0 lead, as opposed to maybe making that lead a little bit precarious, the lead in the game in the eighth inning, and then being in a spot where you cough it up, and now it's 1-1 going in L.A. Let's take one or two more before the break. 617-779-7937. As you guys are loading up the phone lines on Red Sox Review, Andrew and Haverhill's up next. Hey, Andrew.
Hey, what's going on? You know, tonight just hammered home, like, another point that I've been thinking the entire season, that J.D. Martinez is the most valuable player in the American League. He's the most valuable player in all of baseball. You can give me Mookie Betts, which, with his defensive, you know, how he's great defensively and how he is war-wise, but find me a player who has had more of an impact on a team in all of baseball than J.D. Martinez had in this Red Sox team in filling the void that David Ortiz left. Nobody's had more of an impact on a team in baseball this year than J.D. Martinez has had on the Red Sox. And when you talk about value, we're talking about the MVP. Value-wise, like, how can you even dispute that? Like, I don't even think it's close.
I agree with you. And it comes back to, and this is, I don't want to say another debate for another day, we can certainly talk about it, but this comes back to, how do you define the V in most valuable player? How do you really define value? Is it just the best player? Is it the best player on the best team? It's hard to, is it just sabermetric value, the totality of what he can do? When you look at the full body of work, it's hard to really argue that J.D. Martinez gives the Red Sox more than Mookie Betts does in a vacuum, because of Betts' defensive ability and his ability to run the bases, and he's in many ways every bit the hitter that Martinez is, and if he's not quite there, he's close. But, and this is to Andrew's point, and this is why I agree with him, what Martinez has done to this lineup, what he is, I mean, just think about how much more dangerous a guy like Steve Pierce or Xander Bogaerts becomes because they're on either side of J.D. Martinez in a postseason lineup compared to what the Red Sox had last year. It allows you to move Mookie Betts up to the top of the order where he's been throughout the course of the season, and know that you still have an elite run-producing bat in the middle of the lineup. So the ripple effect, the domino effect of Martinez in the lineup, for me, makes him the MVP. Will he win it? Maybe not. It seems like that award is being closely tied to WAR more and more. So if you can play defense and do everything, and if that's your feel for the MVP, just the guy that gives you the most statistically, the most things that you can quantify, that's your MVP, then it's probably Betts. But I look at that impact that he's had everywhere else in the lineup, and I said J.D. Martinez, for me, has got to be the guy. Great problem for the Red Sox is they don't have to decide. They've got both of them. 617-779-7937. We got one or two open phone lines. Let's load those up. React to the Red Sox beating the Dodgers tonight, 4-2 the final, and they head to LA. The Red Sox do just two victories away from a fourth World Series championship this century. Chris Villani hanging out with you. It's Red Sox Review, Sports Radio WEEI. Red Sox Review, Chris Villani with you up until 2 a.m. Taking your calls at 617-779-7937. You can chime in on Twitter. I'm at Chris Villani 44, and weigh in on this Red Sox victory over the Dodgers tonight. A lot of good things to talk about. Kind of mentioned the bullpen as a whole, and talked a lot about Eovaldi, certainly David Price. But another guy who, if you just want reason to continue to feel comfortable going into game three, going into the rest of this series, now on the road against the Dodgers for the middle part of it, at least, and maybe the end part of it. I said before, I don't think this thing's coming back to Fenway for game six, but Craig Kimbrel is that reason to continue to feel confident. He was potentially the guy who could torpedo an entire series. We've seen it happen with closers in the past of the postseason, and you knew he'd be gone. Alex Cora would go to him in high leverage spots, potentially with the game on the line, and you weren't entirely sure what you're going to get. And there was the whole conversation with pitch tipping in between the series, and Eric Gagne, of all people, noticing something and the way that Cora was setting and the way that he was holding the ball, holding his glove, that might have been tipping hitters off to the breaking ball. But what you want from Kimbrel, especially last night with a 4-run lead, but also tonight with a little bit of a narrower or a 2-run lead with a team that at that point going into the ninth inning had been retired 13 straight at bats. Throw strikes. Get ahead, stay ahead. It's a baseball cliche. It's a timeless baseball cliche, but it absolutely applies and applies big time to Craig Kimbrell. Get ahead, stay ahead, throw strikes. And that's what he's done. His command wasn't there in the ALDS, in the ALCS, certainly in swaths over the course of the second half of the season, the regular season. But in now two appearances, back-to-back nights, in a 4-run lead last night in a save situation tonight, Craig Kimbrell looks like the guy that the Red Sox signed on to when they brought him in here. Elite closer, guy that makes other team feel like there is no prayer. And that was it for the Dodgers tonight, 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th. So it was Joe Kelly, who has been fantastic also in this postseason. Evaldi, we talked about a lot as a great find as an 8th inning guy. And then Craig Kimbrell finding himself, finding the form that made him one of the best closers in the game the last two nights. So a lot of reason for optimism, not just the 2-0 lead, but the way the Red Sox have gone about it. This is not a team that is tripping over itself into wins. This is no fluke. The better team is imposing its will. It happened against the Yankees, happened against the Astros, and I weren't even sure going into that series, I wasn't even sure they were the better team. I thought Houston was going to give them a little bit more, but I was wrong. The better team imposed its will in the ALCS, and that's happening here in the World Series as well. 617-779-7937. Let's go back to your phone calls. Rich in Plymouth is up next on Red Sox Review. Hey, Rich.
Hey, Chris. Been listening tonight. I was out of the game, and much like you and some of the callers have said, so much to be happy about and to talk about tonight, from the pitching starting to closer, the defense by Benny once again. You know, the hits and the production with two outs, it's just been a team that continues to impress, and I'm thrilled that we're in the position we're in. The question I ask is of our second baseman thus far, Kinsler. I understand his experience, his glove, the defensive strategy, but, you know, he's the one player that when he gets up the bat, you know, I've had a weak in the knee feeling. And I guess going to L.A. with National League rules, you know, what's the thought? You know, what, you know, it's hard to question what Cora has done, but what's the thought going west? And do you know what his batting average is? I tried to look it up before the call, but what's his batting average in the postseason thus far? And again, hard to be critical, but it's just, that's the one question I have is, you know, do we use him? Do you bring back in the other second baseman?
Brock Holt.
The hot bat, et cetera. Exactly. Exactly. So,
yeah, and I think you'll see, and thanks for the phone call, Rich, to answer your question about second base. One, I don't think you see Mookie Betts there. Number two, you'll see a little bit more moving parts because of the double switch, the lack of a designated hitter. So you'll see Brock Holt, you'll see Eduardo Nunez. You won't see what you saw tonight, which is 10 guys got into the game, excluding pitchers. 10 guys played. Starting 9, and then Mitch Moreland came in, and that was it. Well, Dave Roberts was throwing everybody out there against the Red Sox. You'll see a little bit more in terms of fluidity and flexibility. Credit where it's due. Kinsler did drive in a run tonight. But, yeah, he is the guy. He's hitting 143. I think that's just for the World Series, though, in two games. But he's maybe the one guy in this lineup that there are times where you feel like he's not giving you anything. It's a catcher position. It is what it is. With Jackie Bradley Jr., first of all, he's put some really good swings on the ball, and he's been, I guess, the victim of the shift, some bad luck, but I think he's swung the bat better than what his postseason numbers are, or his World Series, his first two games of the World Series are, it should be, his postseason numbers. The three hits that he had in the ALCS were all huge. He had 9 RBIs, but with Kinsler, he is that guy that when he comes up to the plate, you're not entirely sure whether you're going to get production out of that part of the lineup in a lineup that's designed to produced top to bottom. Now, that said, again, he drove in a run tonight. Bogarts got on with a double, and Kinsler drove him in. So the number 7 hitter in the lineup, who didn't have a hit in the World Series to that point, was able to come through in that spot. But I think you'll see a little bit more fluidity. As far as Mookie Betts at second base, I know that Rich didn't bring this up exactly, but it's been talked about ad nauseum. You might see Mookie Betts play second base. That's happened this year. when it's been a situation where they've had a double switch, Betts comes in, plays second base, then goes back to the outfield. He takes ground balls, and I know that's been shown, I think, on some of the network TV broadcasts. I haven't really seen any of the Fox broadcasts. Based on the Twitter reaction I've seen, I'm not missing much. But for obvious reasons, I'm locked in on the WEEI broadcast because I'm part of it. So the national broadcast, I think, has shown some highlights of him taking ground balls and breathlessly reporting. Will he be getting ready to play the infield? He does that all the time. He frequently will take ground balls. He'll frequently warm up in the infield, stay involved, stay sharp, ready for anything kind of approach from Mookie Betts. So you may see him play second, but actually starting at second base, Alex Cora said that's slim, and I think that'll be the case going in. A lot of it may depend, too, on what happens in Game 3. If you've got a 3-0 lead, as much as the modus operandi here for Cora is put him away, you do have the opportunity to be a little bit more flexible if you have that cushion going into Game 4 if they're able to win in Game 3 on Friday night. Because there's a few things in that in the equation here. It's not just the second base position. It's J.D. Martinez. He doesn't look like he's running all that well with the ankle. Is there an opportunity maybe to get him out of a game if you've got a lead? That opens up an opportunity for somebody like Brock Holt or Nunez to get another at bat. So there's going to be more moving parts in the National League Park. But Kinsler, do you feel great about him up at the plate? Maybe not all the time, but he was good enough tonight. 1-for-3 with a ribby from Kinsler. You take that 10 times out of 5. 617-779-7937. Ken in Franklin is coming back from the Red Sox win tonight. Hello, Ken.
Hey, Chris. How are you doing?
I'm great.
Excellent. Hey, Chris, we spoke probably about a week ago, a little more. I called in. You were all about Houston beating the Red Sox. I called and I said,
damn right.
You know, I was like, look, you know, you're not giving the Red Sox a chance. I thought the Red Sox were on a roll. They beat the Yankees. I've seen this movie before. And I thought they were on a roll and that they would continue to do well. And I'm leaving the game right now. We're almost back home in Norfolk, Mass. And, you know, I got to say, you know, I don't know if you've ever played baseball before, but emotion and, you know, just the vibe of the game. The Red Sox are hitting on all cylinders. And I just feel like they're on a roll.
Sure. Look, and Ken,
it's not all about
Ken,
stats.
You're. I never said it was all about stats, but Ken, you were right. I was wrong. That said, that on a roll thing, you make the exact same argument for the Astros going into that series. The exact same argument. I mean, they were every bit on a roll too. They just smoked the Indians in 3 straight. So it's not like it was completely out of left field to say, well, this team is also on a roll that won the World Series last year. I said I was wrong. No problem saying that. I'm happy to be wrong in this case. But it's not like one team was on a roll and the other team had no business being there. That's the way it played out. That was not the way it looked going into game one of that ALCS. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I just hope that you're on board now at this point because the Red Sox are looking like they're firing all cylinders, are going to L.A. And, you know, I just got to say as a baseball player, these guys are on board, and they're going to get the job done.
I'll tell you what, as a baseball player in whatever, I don't know, over 30 league you're in, you got your cliches down pat. But, yeah, I'm on board now to the point where I don't think it's coming back to Boston. I think this series is done. I don't think it's coming back to Boston. Not the way that this team – and the Dodgers, unlike the Astros, I never looked at the Dodgers and said this is a superior team to the Red Sox. They're just not. The JV League this year was the National League. Doesn't always work out that way. It did this year. The 3 best teams, in my mind, maybe 4 if you want to really argue it, but I may give the Dodgers the 4 spot there. But the 3 best teams, inarguably, were all in the American League, and the Red Sox smoked the other 2 of those. And now they're in a spot where how can you not be on board? There's no real sound reasoning you can give for, in my mind, the Dodgers even making this a series. The Red Sox are just better. And the only thing that's been brought up, it was a caller last hour talking about the quirky National League rules and does that throw sort of a curveball in this. You got vast dimensions now in the outfield in Dodger Stadium. That kind of stuff can make a difference. I think the outfield dimensions have made a difference in the first two games of this series, the Dodgers being relatively unaccustomed to playing out there. I thought it made a difference tonight on the J.D. Martinez base hit. Maybe Yasiel Puig doesn't get there either way, but damn, was he deep in right field for a right-handed batter? Even a guy with power like Martinez, he was really deep in right field, and that was after the Dodgers talked about this during the day today and how they were not going to play so deep and try to make some adjustments in the outfield. I thought last night, Hernandez, again, coincidentally on a ball by Martinez, maybe doesn't get there anyway, but got a really lazy break on that deep fly ball that he might have been able to make a play on, just gave up on it. To me, that's not inexperience playing the outfield. That's inexperience.